In a new book on poverty, the author goes to the source, the people living in the ghetto. NPR's Madeline Brand spoke with Adrienne LeBlanc about her book, Random Family, Love, Drugs, Trouble, and Coming of Age in the Bronx.
Random Family is about people who might be found in a newspaper story with the descriptions welfare mother or drug dealer attached to their names. But Adrienne LeBlanc wanted to know more about them. She wanted to know everything. Over the course of this 400-page book, the minute details of their lives layer on top of each other to paint a picture of a group of people mostly invisible to or misunderstood by mainstream culture. Like a kid she visited in court who was there on a drug dealing charge.
And he was wearing this button-up shirt that had huge dollar signs on it. And I knew for all kinds of reasons that had to do with the length of time I'd been around and knowing him and knowing how he dressed, that that was his dressed-up shirt. But I was also, it was like a split frame, because as a journalist, I'm saying, oh my goodness, here you are in front of a judge for a drug dealing charge, and you're wearing a shirt with huge dollar signs. Now, if you're a daily newspaper reporter, what a detail, right? Like, oh, flashy kid, you know, completely disrespectful. You could swing that detail in a million directions, right? None of which were actually true to the case of this young man who, in fact, was absolutely trying to present his best front. And I thought, what a blessing to know that you just were constantly forced to back up on your assumptions by the length of time. Like, oh boy, do I not know a thing.
LeBlanc and I are spending an afternoon in the Bronx neighborhood where she spent a decade reporting. We walk past a bodega, a Latino music store, and a bakery. Most of the cakes in the window are for baby showers. They're big, white sheet cakes with gooey, mountainous baby booties on top.
Look, 1, 2, 3, 4 out of 5 cakes. 6 cakes, right? 4 for baby showers.
LeBlanc seizes on these details like an anthropologist. For her, it's more than just a window display. It's a clue as to what makes this neighborhood tick. The arrival of a baby can be good news for people who don't have a lot of that, a bright moment in lives that are often bleak.
So many things about writing about poverty focus on the hardship and the sadness, which is huge, but there's something wrong if you don't have the joyful part.
LeBlanc reports on the day-in, day-out of 4 main characters, Jessica, Caesar, Coco, and Boy George. LeBlanc first entered their lives in the late 1980s when she was on assignment for Rolling Stone magazine to do a story on Boy George. Then, at age 22, he was one of the most notorious drug dealers in the city. Now he's in prison serving a life sentence.
He's still a legend in prison culture. Still, I was talking to one of his heroin suppliers the other day, still currently incarcerated, and he was saying to me, you know, still, new kids come in and they talk about the story of Boy George. You know, he had incredibly lucrative drug spots. I mean, there were spots that brought in $60,000 a day. So you figure that in one spot is almost $400,000 a week.
Boy George rented an apartment in Manhattan just to stash all his money. He had several cars, including a Bentley and a customized James Bond car that spat tax and oil. He was smart, handsome, and ruthless. He caught Jessica's eye and she his. The attraction would change her life. A few years later, when she was 23 years old, Jessica was sentenced to 10 years in prison for working a couple of shifts in one of Boy George's drug mills bagging heroin. She had 3 children. Jessica's brother Caesar was also sent to prison. Caesar's girlfriend was Coco, the only one of the 4 not locked up, so LeBlanc spent most of her time with Coco, hanging out in the Bronx, sometimes for days.
This is the courtyard where I spent many, many hours, right here, this little space.
It's a cement courtyard where LeBlanc and Coco and people from the neighborhood would sit and talk as the kids played or rode their bikes. It's 3 steps below street level, and buses, ambulances, and SUVs blaring salsa or rap music speed by above. It was here that LeBlanc began to understand that life in this neighborhood was less about Boy George's gangster glamour and more about Coco's daily struggles to survive as a young, single mom. LeBlanc reads a passage from her book about what it was like for Coco living here. She's just received some advice from her stepfather to aim for a better life.
Exactly how she was supposed to do this was unclear, but Coco might have instinctively understood that success was less about climbing than about not falling down. Since there were few real options for mobility, people in Coco's world measured improvement in microscopic increments of better than whatever was worse. Thick and fed was better than thin and hungry. Family fights indoors, even if everyone could hear them, were better than taking private business to the street Heroin was bad, but crack was worse. A girl who had 4 kids by 2 boys was better than a girl who had 4 by 3. A boy who dealt drugs and helped his mom and kids was better than a boy who was greedy and spent the income on himself. The same went for girls and their welfare checks. Mothers who went clubbing and didn't yell at their kids the next tired day were better than mothers who did. That took about 4 years.
That one passage?
Those insights took about 4 years.
By the time the book ends, Coco is 29 years old and has 5 children. She's moved out of the city in an attempt to build a more stable life. LeBlanc still visits her.
I walked in her building and a door to the apartment was open and she didn't see me immediately. She's blasting this sort of remix of J-Lo's Jenny on the Block, dancing around the living room. And I just watched her for a minute, and then she turned around and saw me, and she came over and hugged me, and I said, "What's going on? Why are you so happy?" And she said, "I got to have work early." Do you know what I mean? And I just thought it was such a beautiful thing. But that is her. You know, that's her, like her times 100. And I just feel like maybe that enabled me to stay in this sort of hard world.
LeBlanc says she finally stopped reporting after events in her own family demanded her attention. Her father got cancer, and she needed to spend a lot of time with him. She says that even though the book is filled with devastating moments, she was at her happiest when she was here in the Bronx reporting. She loved being in this world. For a while, Random Family was on the New York Times bestseller list. LeBlanc says that surprised her. She thought it entirely possible that no one would want to read a book about poor people.
To me, like one of the most brutal things about being poor is the sense that your life is not necessary, that you don't need to be any place, and nobody cares if you go any place, and that you are not called to be someplace and required to be part of something, that it can just pass you by. It's a choice for somebody to know about your life or not. And that's sort of one of the things I think is so great about people reading the book, is that you could live your life a certain life in this country and stay away from the reality of what it means for a huge chunk of the population to be struggling so mightily, right? You don't have to learn about this world.
Journalist Adrienne LeBlanc. Her book is called Random Family: Love, Drugs, Trouble, and Coming of Age in the Bronx. Madeline Brand, NPR News, New York.